Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is artist, poet, and writer, Frida Hughes, and we are talking about her new book, George, A Magpie Memoir. Frida, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much for having me on.
I had no idea what I was in for. Okay, there's been all these like sort of cute books about a person and a bird, like That Quail Robert or Arnie the Darling Starling. And this is not the one of those books. This is a hard, in places, a really difficult book because you're having a hard time with George, plus the fact you're having a hard time in your life.
George put me through my paces. What turned out to be a good deed. My father once said to me, he said, "No good deed ever goes unpunished." And George tested me to my limits.
Oh my God! Reading about it was like, I am never having a magpie ever.
No, wear body armor. wear body armor. Have a skip in the back garden for the detritus that it will bring and collect and also deliver.
It was like having a monkey.
It is. George was. I used to joke about George being like having a 3, 4, or 5 year old child with wings. So whatever a child could do, pick up and throw or macerate, George could do it while in the air.
Now this is also a book about you. Very personal. It's a book about your longing, and how George fit into that as well as other things. Since you were a child, you really longed for things like plants, pets, and most of all, a home of your own. And you never had the chance to have that until later in your life.
Well, it was the moving, because my father wanted he was here, there, and everywhere after my mother died, just before my third birthday. And then there were various schools. Then there was there were a couple of boarding schools. So you know, you're not at home. And then, you know, one leaves home, and then there's a lifestyle, right? Because, you know, you don't move into your last home the moment you leave home. You move into lots of homes, and I used to treat each home as if it was my last home. And my dad said to me once, "Well, of course, you know, you'll grow out of this one too." And it was, no. So finally, when I came to Wales in 2004, I looked at the house, and I thought, I'm never going to grow out of this house, and I won't now.
Now, the house needed a lot of work, too.
Yes, it did. I moved here in 2004, and they finally finished the work 2 weeks ago. So that'll tell you how long it took. It's taken a long time.
Now, the other main person in your life at that point in time was somebody that is solely referred to as the ex.
Yeah.
I love that, Frida. I think that works.
That's because he sort of is the ex, and the trouble is that, of course, if one calls a person by name, you conjure them up as as present somehow, and as they're no longer present, it didn't seem right. So I went with my instincts on that one.
But when I read this book, it was, to me, it was also a journal of the final decline of your marriage.
The end. It was the penultimate year of our marriage, and the cracks had already started appearing before we even moved into the house. So it was a question of if I ignored it, it wasn't happening. which is always adopt the ostrich method, because it and George helped me do that. You see, the thing was with George, that was, you know, me able to put something front and foremost that really needed attention and could distract me from all the other things. Things I couldn't fix because I'd tried for a number of years. And it's very awkward when you're faced with a situation or a situation you are actually living in with that involves someone else, and you realize that you can't fix it. It does take two. And maybe they feel they can't fix it and that it does take two. And what you're doing is you're just treading water until things get so difficult that your sort of mind is made up for you, if you like. And so George was the most welcome distraction when he landed in my life as a scrap of feathers that couldn't walk or fly. And I did willfully make him the center of my life. I didn't expect to fall in love with him quite as much as I did.
Because you really fell head over heels, kid.
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was a sucker. He saw me coming. He saw me coming, and he wrapped me around his little wingtips. He really did.
Well, we have to tell the story of how you found George.
George nest in a tree on the fence line of my garden with another neighbor, and it had this magpie nest. And I'd always thought, very much by rote, I have to say, oh, magpie's bad. You know, people think they attack things, kill things, whatever. Actually, they're great scrapers up of dead stuff. So actually, they have a very useful purpose. But of course, they are corvids, and corvids can be very mean. And so I used to look at the nest with suspicion. And then one day, we had this terrific storm. I mean, really hammered the house. And the house is quite a sizable chunk and has been here for a couple of hundred years. But I really thought the windows were going to come out. And in the morning, the tree was ragged and the magpie nest was just in pieces and not there anymore. And I found a dead magpie chick, and it had feathers, just a few feathers. And I looked at it and I thought, you know, that's a real shame because I don't like seeing, you know, things young and dead. And then I found one that was still barely alive, but a cat had got it and it had holes all over it and it had maggots. And so I cleaned it up and brought it in and tried to keep it alive. And I, you know, went off to dig worms and finish my garden. And then I found the third chick. And the third chick saved its life by screeching because I was about to stick a spade into it. It was on the ground and, you know, sort of camouflaged by leaves. And it shrieked, and I finally discovered it among the leaves and bits and pieces and took it in to be with its little sibling. Sibling sadly died about an hour later, so... and George became the... George is the sole survivor, made very sure that he was going to keep going.
Now, you have you have three dogs. You have Vermin, I mean, not Vermin, Widget, Snickers, and Mouse.
Well done, yes. Little white terrier, now, little white Maltese terriers.
Now, when I get to this part of the book that you're bringing the magpie in, had you ever done anything like this before?
I've looked after wounded, limping, dying animals. And, of course, when we find them, if we can catch them, they're usually going to die because that's why you're able to catch them. So the most I've been able to do is give things a good death. I find it very hard. I can't put them out of their misery, but I can make them comfortable. But sometimes there are successes. But this was, I'd never looked after a bird so young. And I also did think that the dogs, being dogs, doesn't matter. You know, little terriers are trained to go and kill things. I was a bit worried that they might look at George and think, well, you know, handy snack. Not what happened. I put the cage on the floor, kept George in a cage, and I put him on the floor so the dogs were always around him. And he grew up thinking that the dogs were family, and the dogs got very used to him very, very quickly.
He used to run around with the dogs.
He did. In fact, the first morning he managed to escape from his cage, and I had to put him back in to find out how. He actually discovered that once he began to walk, he could stagger, and he staggered out of the bowl in his cage that was the nest onto the floor of the cage and crept sideways, one wing, body, second wing, out of the cage. Another animal or bird would not have done that. They'd ram their head through the bars and think, oh, I don't fit. But George had discovered that by turning sideways, he was thinner. And I came down one morning, and he wasn't in his cage. I opened the door, and the dogs used to line up, the three of them, always, always. Three of them lined up in the kitchen, waiting for breakfast. And there were four of them. There were three dogs and George. And I looked down, and I thought, my God, they didn't eat the magpie. And George was just skittering around beside them, doing exactly what they did. He was following their lead. He believed he was one of them. Very interesting.
For people who don't know corvids are the most intelligent birds there are. And George is no exception. However, different from, like, say, a jackdaw or a crow, magpies, and you describe this in the book, are very impish.
They are. I think impish is an excellent word for them because They are playful. George would engage the dogs in play. If they had something that he was interested in, he would get it off them, and they would chase him for it. There were tugs of war. There was all sorts. I took boring reams of film that I just love, and I used to sit and watch. And my baby growing up, I was dreadful. I was completely smitten. But I started writing this diary because I write a daily diary, and I started writing a little George section at the end of each day because George developed so fast. But also, what he did was so unusual, and I did think to myself, I am probably never in my life ever going to be able to have another magpie or corvid growing up this close. So everything he did was fascinating, and it was all new to me. It was also new to the dogs, but his playfulness, but his desire to engage others in playing.
Yeah.
Whereas I can't imagine. I have cared for young crows since. But they never wanted to engage you. They were very much more serious. You know, it's like, no, we don't play. We're too clever. We're too smart. And we're just going to sit here looking aloof. But no, George wanted to play.
I love the way you describe George in the book as a little eating, shitting machine.
Oh, yeah. One friend said, and I did put that in the book, don't write about the shitty stuff, but there's an awful lot of it. And so readers forgive me, but
well, that's the reality of having a bird in the house. Birds crap a lot.
I know. It's it's that thing of being covered in shit. I did take precautions. I lived with an awful lot of disinfectant. I should have taken out shares in a kitchen roll company. But curiously, as he grew, the little poops became quite small and quite manageable. Oh. Whereas as a baby,
that's interesting.
When they are eating sort of their own body weight daily almost, that was a very different matter. And I have to say that it was, you know, if you could have stuck a nappy on a corvid, I would have tried.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is artist, writer, poet, Frieda Hughes. And we're talking about her new book. I love it. George, a Magpie Memoir. Frieda, did you do the line drawings in the book?
Yes, I did.
They're wonderful.
This is of George. Thank you.
Well, it's probably based on the 9 billion photographs you have of George.
Well, some were based on the sketches I did of George at the time, but they were very rudimentary, so I sort of redid and tidied them up. I have got thousands of photos of George, you're quite right. Funny that, yeah. It's the smittenness. We can't help it.
Well, I also want to mention, I mean, people may think he's pooping a lot, but the thing about George is he would just mischievously, like, tear a lot of stuff apart. Like, and steal things. I mean, he would create havoc within your house.
Yeah, left alone with the dogs, he could turn my kitchen into a war zone in a couple of hours. Knives out of chopping blocks. He taught himself. He found out how to get knives out of the chopping blocks. Pencils on the floor, always red ones. The dogs would shred them. Cushions, tea bags. Do you know if you get two or three tea bags and break them open and scatter them around, how far that will go? tissues out of the boxes. So he would empty an entire box of tissues all over the kitchen, and then the dogs would just have a party in it. And so I would come in, and there were a couple of occasions when it was extreme, and it looked as though, seriously, I'd had a party for hysterical toddlers on E numbers and sugar, you know, trashing my kitchen.
God.
I can remember just the first time looking at it in such dismay, and I didn't even know where to begin. I really didn't know where to begin.
I have to ask you, and it's clear in the book, how did your ex think about this all of this?
He would have just shoved the bird out of the window at the first opportunity, shut the window and never let it back in again. And he did persuade me against my will and better judgment on several occasions to keep the window shut. When George finally learned to fly after 2 months, and then I thought, okay, this is it, he's got to go, and he flew outside, he came back every night for a further 3 months. And sometimes the ex would just sit there and say, right, I'm not having him in, I'm going to eat my supper without George stealing anything, which I couldn't really argue with because George used to steal everything off your plate. and I would have to sit here and watch the magpie banging on the kitchen window, demanding to be let in because it's a nest. And it was awful. It was so painful listening to the child saying, "Mummy, mummy, let me in." Well, that's how I perceived it. You see, I anthropomorphize terribly.
I don't know if you're anthropomorphizing. I mean, Corvids are smart enough that they have feelings. And I've actually done interviews about this. And Corvids have feelings. And I don't know. I think they really could be like, you know, please let me in because I want to be part of what you're doing. Now, you're an artist and a poet.
I am.
Did you work with George on your shoulder?
I did. I worked with
I
George
can't
on
believe
my
you got anything done.
I could type. I could sit and type. And this is going to sound really indulgent to anybody who's never had a baby Corvid living with them. I would put a dust sheet under the chair. I would sit at the table with the computer, and I would have or a sketchbook or whatever notepad. And I would wear a work shirt, and George could sit on my shoulder, poop all he liked, and you know everything was going to be clean upable or washable. And that way I could spend time with my magpie and still get some work done. But you're right, he was distracting. He was very distracting.
Now, you have several poems in this book. Could I impose on you to read one?
Absolutely. There was one I actually wrote while George was in front of me prancing around on the table, and he was paying particular attention to his own hygiene and appearance. And the poem is simply called George. He rifles his feathers as if searching for socks in the washing basket of his breast pocket and wing pits. Still sockless, he slides the split blade of his beak along each twisted back tail feather, bringing them up almost to his ear as his nutcracker reaches each tip. He's as thorough as a man who's lost his keys. He shudders his skin so his black and whites froth and settle neatly. An oil slick glistens from his bum rudder, which flicks up and down like a switch. He pauses to examine his toothpicks, on the end of which are feet. Experimentally, he slides one forward as if pushing a small suitcase. Step, skip, pivot, stride. He's gathering speed. He turns again. High step, skip, skip. And he's dancing a magpie dance to his head full of magpie music.
I love the poems that you wrote in this book about him.
Thank you.
What I also loved is when you basically were keeping to yourself most of this time, enjoying your garden, enjoying George. But you eventually had some guests. And how did the guests react to George?
These particular guests?
Well, wait a minute. There was a bad situation with your friend Sue and her boyfriend.
Yes, obviously, not her real name, I have to say. Her boyfriend walked into my kitchen, saw George sitting on the sofa, and said, "You've got a magpie. That's cruel." And it just went downhill from there. And I put him out into the utility room so he wouldn't hop around and bother them. And I was sort of reeling, and I said, "I rescued the magpie. It's still in, you know, growing and so on." I sort of tried to explain. In the fridge, I had a full cream tea. I had all the scones, jams, cream, sausage rolls. I had quiches. I had a feast. And I had some sausages in the oven, and that was all I remembered with the sausages in the oven. It was extraordinary. Everything I had prepared to give them. I was going to... people went straight out of my head because I was just so stunned that somebody would come in and be so, somebody I'd never met, and be so sharp and critical. And
oh, he was a colossal ass.
Oh, yes. no argument from me. he really was, and so we sat here in a sort of silence. Well, I sat in a sort of relative silence while the others talked, and my friend sort of talked over him as if she could stop him saying anything else, you know, more offensive. And it was only after they'd gone and I realized that I hadn't given them everything else. You know, I'd given them the sausages and I'd forgotten all the other food that I'd got for them. But no, it was a realization, you know, because not everybody looked on George the way I did, obviously. But it was that thing of in your own home, you know, stranger, own home.
Yeah, oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and you'd think, wouldn't you, that perhaps, you know, keeping their mouth shut might have been a good idea, but...
Well, it's just manners.
That's that, too.
There's so much... By the way, we're only sort of skipping around the generalities of this book, but there's some little details I just wanted to know more about. I'm going to ask you about it. You went to a party, and you had a delightful conversation about cement mixers.
Oh, yes. I have my own.
I need to know more about that conversation.
When people used to ask me, oh, what have you been up to, Frieda? And because I was building the garden, and when I say building it, I have my own cement mixer. It mixes a barrel load at a time. It's electric.
You really can carry on a conversation about cement mixers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes, I should stop now, shouldn't I? But people would ask me, and I'd say, well, I've been mixing. I've mixed, you know, 3 tons of cement, of mortar this week. And they just, you know, glaze over and walk away, and I completely sympathize. But this particular occasion, the woman looked at me, and I said, oh, I've been building my garden, and I've been mixing cement, because it was all I could think about, that and George. And she looked at me and said, really? She said, I've got my own cement mixer too. I build walls. She said, and so after that, we had the most hysterical evening.
Wow.
It was the only time that anybody has had any understanding of what it's like to have your own cement mixer as a woman.
Wow. We should probably do another interview just about cement mixers. Now, one of the things that happens with George is, and you mentioned this earlier, is he's going outside now. And it ends up he's not particularly loved in the neighborhood, and this is serious. And people may not realize that magpies are looked on as vermin in many parts of Britain.
They are, especially in farming communities. And I live in a farming community. But one of the worst things was, I mean, some people liked him because, you know, they couldn't believe a magpie could be so tame. And he'd go visit, and they liked that. Not my neighbor. And my neighbor was a really lovely elderly woman, sadly no longer with us. And she had a terror of birds in any case. But George had a bad habit. He had a couple of bad habits, as people will read in the book, one or two. But this was a very antisocial bad habit when he met new people. Shall I say what it is, or shall I leave people to read
it? You can say what it is, because it gets more complicated.
It doesn't sound like much, but he would pace around somebody's feet and then bounce off their head.
That's a lot with a bird like that.
It is, and for somebody who was unprepared, it would be a bit astonishing and possibly a bit annoying. For somebody who has an absolute terror of birds, it would be more than they could stand. Right. And my neighbor, Jean, could not stand birds. She was petrified. She took to wearing a hat between the house and her car. She stopped going out in the garden. And I said, but Jean, you know, I'll keep him in. And she said, yes, but on the occasions you do let him out. She said, there's more than one magpie, and I don't know which one is George. I don't know which magpie to run away from.
Oh,
and George,
God.
You know, if he wanted to jump on her head, he's going to fly after her. As people will find when they read about my cleaner, because also another story. But Jean was actually the reason that near the end I decided I had to build an aviary, like the biggest aviary I could build.
It's like and all the while, by the way, I want to mention, you're dealing with specific health challenges.
Oh, yeah. I still have, but I manage it, funnily enough, much better now. Chronic back pain. And
did some of that have to do with your ex?
Could be. I did have a lot of symptoms. I mean,
you had a lot of stress.
I did, and stress can kill you, as we all know.
I know that.
you know, coughing blood, all sorts of ailments. I was they sent me off to see various specialists for one or two things. One or two things that, funnily enough, disappeared literally within 24 hours of a resolution of the problems. But I'm going to leave that bit for the end of the book.
the amazing thing in general, and I'm not going to say how, but you end up looking after a couple of other birds at the end of the book, but none of them have the intelligence or the joie de vivre that, that George had. I remember you're watching after a little duck, and you loved it. You loved the duck. You were taking care of it, but it was positively boring.
Oh, yeah. No relationship. I mean, you know, I was very, very fond of the duck, but no relationship at all. And when it flew, it was like, oh, bye. See ya. not like George, where I used to go around the garden calling for him, hoping that he'd come back with his favorite treats in my top pocket, and sadly crying, because I was just like, George, you left. And then I'd have to think, well, hang on a minute, you know, that's happy, right?
That's right.
But then he does. I sort of wish for a sign that he is still alive.
And we'll see don't give anything away.
I get the sign.
Quiet. My guest tonight is artist, poet, writer, Frieda Hughes. And we've been talking about her new book. It's really interesting, fascinating, and fun. George, A Magpie Memoir. Frieda, it's been a pleasure.
Mark, thank you so much.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.